Welcome back, guys. DGS 306. Going to talk to our pal, Attorney Chad Pleben. Today was the day for closing arguments in the Trump case. Hopefully, the jury's going to get the case today, and we could have a judgment as early as tonight, I would guess. Chet, first of all, you and I have both done trials that took 4.5 hours, much less closing arguments.
Yeah, it seems like a long time. The state is started, I don't know, an hour and a half or 2 hours ago, and they're only about a third of the way through, they said. Now, I can't believe that they're going to take all that time. I don't think that the jury's going to get it. Get the case today. I think that it'll go into tomorrow. Now, I doubt that the prosecutor is going to extend his closing argument because apparently there's no time limit. I don't think he's going to extend it into tomorrow. And so what tomorrow will be the judge's instructions to the jury, which should take probably about an hour, and then the jury will get it after that. My guess is that if they get it tomorrow around noon, we'll see a verdict, I would say, by Friday. My guess also is that it's that Friday thing that these jurors have been hanging out there for weeks now, and they're going to want to get this finished and get it over with.
See, I would have assumed he would have given it to the jury even if it was 5 p.m. tonight, but you think they'll let him get a good night's sleep and come back?
I do. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen because A, the prosecution isn't finished with their argument. B, he still has to give them the jury instructions. And remember, Dave, there's 34 counts that they have to go through here. So yeah, that's going to take some time. They're probably going to want to hear some of the tape recordings, for example, the September tape recording and the one where he recorded Trump on his cell phone. So I think clearly I would be shocked if he tried to give it to him tonight. So I'm 99.9% certain that they won't get it until tomorrow.
I think the defense made two major mistakes. They're clearly hanging their hat on Michael Cohen being a horrible person. And I just think that's a mistake because there wasn't a single person in New York who didn't already know that. And then two, clearly Donald Trump is running the show because the defense spent, I thought, way too much time. I wouldn't have even have broached it that there was no sex. It never happened. She made it all up. Again, no one thinks that. My dog knows that he slept with Stormy Daniels.
And that's where common sense is going to come into play. My concept about where they made a huge mistake was on saying, well, that Access Hollywood tape, that wasn't a concern. I mean, that was absolutely no problem to Donald Trump. Now, I doubt that there's anybody in that room that would believe anywhere, frankly, that wasn't a concern to Donald Trump. And clearly the evidence of just the conversations that Cohen had with him that are recorded would reflect that obviously that was a concern. McDougal was a concern and Stormy Daniels was a concern. And the other part of the problem, I think, is that, you know, at the very start, claiming that he never knew Stormy Daniels or never knew McDougal, I think was those were huge mistakes on his part. Now, they did, I think they did make some points. And as you said, they painted Cohen as a liar. And what they were trying to do was they were trying to say, look, there is no proof beyond the testimony of Michael Cohen that Trump knew that when he was signing those checks, that was for reimbursement for Stormy Daniels and reimbursement for $130,000 worth of monies that were paid to her by Michael Cohen. Now, obviously, the smoking guns and what the prosecution is going to do to rebut most of that is to say, well, wait a minute, Cohen's testimony, first of all, you know, we didn't advertise for Cohen. You know, he wasn't a rent a witness and bring him in here. You know, he was in the middle of this. And what, you know, usually people like that don't exactly have clean hands because they're in the middle of some kind of a conspiracy. and see, you know, you don't get some priest that's in the middle of some kind of conspiracy and then expect them to come in and testify. So he's part of the conspiracy, essentially. So I think that there is enough beyond the testimony of Michael Cohen. There is enough corroborative evidence to corroborate what Cohen is doing. For example, the two tape recordings, the one in September that he recorded Trump talking about some McDougal payoffs, and the other one that he recorded, again, talking about some of the McDougal issues. So if he's talking about McDougal, and there is no tape recording about Stormy Daniels, but if he is talking about McDougal, and he's talking about ways to conceal that and essentially to assist the election and influence the election because of the Access Hollywood tape, which starts all of this, then it's not a quantum leap to assume, and using your common sense and the reasonable inferences and the circumstantial evidence that was presented, that certainly what Cohen is saying as it relates to Stormy Daniels is accurate and truthful. And as we talked about the other day, they did the 90-day here, watch this, and so let's sit here for, 90 minutes, 90 seconds, rather. Mm-hmm. Let's sit here and let's play 90 seconds. And that was the recording between him and Schiller, or when he made the phone call to Schiller, and then Schiller handed the phone to Trump, and that's when according to Michael Cohen, that he told Trump about the payoff to Stormy Daniels, that everything was taken care of and really not to worry about it. And the other piece of hard evidence, I think, and really strong evidence, is Exhibit 35. And we've talked about this throughout the commentary that I've made on this case. Exhibit 35 is Weisselberg's handwritten writing on the repayment to Donald Trump, and the number that's on his handwritten notes is $130,000. Now, I suppose you could say, well, what a coincidence. Yeah. You know, he was just reimbursing him for paying him $130,000, but it happens to be the exact amount that Cohen was looking for the reimbursement. So, and then, of course, there's the increase for tax purposes.
So I think we have a pretty good idea what happens if there's an acquittal or a hung jury. I doubt they're ever going to file these charges again. But if he is convicted, what are the possibilities?
Possibilities are that he could go to the penitentiary for 4 years, up to 4 years. He could have a kind of a house arrest. He could get a fine, or he could get probation. But that's all up to the court. And the defense made a mistake because they injected punishment into a portion of their closing argument. And Marchant wasn't real happy about that and gave a curative instruction that the jury is not to consider. It's not their job to worry about punishment or what the effects of that might be. It's on the judge and only the judge that will do that.
So what are you thinking? If you had to bet your own $10, which way do you think it's going to go?
I'm a little concerned. I think that they, being the defendant, played for one juror to hang him up.
Yeah.
That's a pretty difficult thing to do, I think. But I think it's a possibility. I think that there are some unanswered questions. I think that if they truly believe that Michael Cohen can't be believed on anything, and they rationalize these other corroborative pieces of evidence like Exhibit 35 and the Weisselberg handwritten notes on the $130,000, that there may very well be one juror that hangs it up. But I think that the state put on a pretty good case, I think, and they did it really well. And they did it with Pecker. And they did it. And I said at the very beginning of this, I thought Pecker was their strongest witness. And Pecker was a buddy of Donald Trump. And Pecker and Donald Trump at the very outset of this right after the Access Hollywood situation. Pecker meets with Trump and Cohen, and they talk about the catch and kill, all the catch and kill stuff. And what this is another, I think, mistake that the defense made. They said, well, you know, all that sort of stuff, that's not, they're not talking about killing, you know, Stormy Daniels and those things. They're, that's kind of common practice when you're running an election. Really? Yeah, you think that jury is going to buy into that?
Right. Right.
You know, so,
yeah, they
so,
certainly wouldn't want it to be. They would. No juror there is going to be happy that that's the way that the real world works.
Right. And I think that the prosecution at the commencement of their closing argument, they said this is not a hush money case. This is an election interference case when Donald Trump attempts to influence the election to basically get over the hurdle of Access Hollywood. And that all starts it. And so, you know, you don't leave your common sense at the front door. You use your common sense in deciding what the evidence is and what the reasonable inferences are. So and Trump was upset because he said, well, he doesn't get the last word. Well, the fact of the matter is that in New York, they start with
weird.
The defendant, and they do. Yeah. Now here it's even worse. Because you start with the prosecutor, you go with the defendant, and then the state or the prosecution in federal court, they have rebuttal. So that's
it could
even
be worse
than New York. Yeah, yeah. So
all right,
so
buddy. Well, we will probably have a verdict this week, and we'll be talking to you first. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Let's do some audio. What do we got?
All right, Wheels has a couple of pieces here. Andrew's got a piece I'm excited to hear, so who would like to start?
Let's start with Wheels since he's newly fresh.
Okay. I don't know what I have.
It says Draymond.
Oh, Draymond. Did you see this? This is a sports one. So Draymond Green of the Warriors was doing a podcast, I believe, with LeBron James. Sure. And he was talking about...
Because
yeah, that's
he
right.
have a podcast?
Right, right. He's on the LeBron James podcast.
It was Shaq.
Oh, Shaq. You're right, right.
Yeah,
it was Shaq.
The big podcast.
So, yeah, the big podcast with Shaq. And he's... I think this will be enough setup. He's saying that the system is set up so that NBA players won't be wealthy when they retire.
The fines to me don't make sense. You know, when you talk about as hard as we work to accumulate wealth, coming from situations that most people never make it out, and then you get fined the way we get fined, it's actually not set up for us to be wealthy after we're done playing. This job is not set up the way we're taxed.
Oh, California?
The way we're taxed, the way we're fined, and you know, you hear about all these programs like this program, this program, that shit is to cover everybody. This program is to teach this guy this. But if I do something wrong, I lose $100,000. Man, it took my mom 4 years when I was growing up to make $100,000. And I lose that in the night because, what? The referee got mad at me, and he didn't like what I said to him. So I lose $5,000 like that, like on a test?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
because you continue. He is the worst repeat offender when it comes to technical fouls, getting thrown out of games, cheap shotting other players.
I know how he can keep his money.
Yeah, stop being an idiot.
Yeah.
But the idea, like, so basically what he said is, and by the way, the average NBA player falls into the 37% tax bracket. So he's probably higher than that. And I guess if you're saying, if you're comparing it to what the owners pay, well, they're probably paying 15% or 10% or whatever, if they're paying taxes at all, with all of the write-offs and all the things that go on there. But, like, he's currently playing on a $100 million contract. Let's say we took the 40% off of that. That's still $60 million. And none of us are going to make 1/60th of that in a 10-year span. Like, most normal people. What's the average household income?
50, 60?
Yeah. So what are you talking about? Like that lack of self-awareness. I know we were talking about that earlier, but it was stunning to hear him be like, yeah, I'm going to end up making almost $200 million, but I'm not set up to be wealthy. And you know why? It's because I keep getting fined for doing all this stuff that I know I'm not supposed to do. And the rules say I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I keep doing it, but somehow they're taking my money.
And what? By the way, your peers think the same thing about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that money, by the way, those go to charitable causes. And they can be a tax write-off for the players. So, come on.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Wheels, every time I hear this song, my band practiced one time upstairs at Killer Vintage. Killer Vintage was like Cheers. We'd go there all the time and just shoot the crap and stuff. And we played this song. We never played it before. And we played it and I sang it and felt pretty good about it. We come downstairs. I'm carrying my guitar in the case and everything. And Dave Hinson, who owns it, is there. And he's very under the radar guy. And he goes, oh, hey, don't ever play that song here again.
All right. So was it that he did not like the song or he did not like the way you guys did it?
I don't think he liked anything about it.
Okay.
Another time, Dave Cowles, who ran my band, amazing guitarist and vocalist, just a journeyman musician. And we're playing over, I think this place is called Shooters in Illinois. And we're playing Three Lock Box by Montrose, Sammy Hagar. And I'm singing lead. And I can sing. I mean, I played for 20 years. I can at least say that I can sing. And I thought I killed it. And we're like packing up and stuff. And I'm fishing for a compliment. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know if we should keep playing Three Lock Box. I'm just not sure I'm really hitting the vocals. Expecting him to go, like, you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? You brought the place down. And Dave goes, yeah, your voice gets a little thin up in the higher registers. I was like, whoo.
Not expecting that.
Oh, I need to.
What I was looking for.
I need to put my amplifier in my truck.
Need some air.
I need some air. I need to go throw up.
Just if it makes you feel any better, Dave, that was kind of the reaction I got from every evaluator that watched me play baseball once I got to be about 20.
You're not good.
You're not exactly what we would call professional material.
Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Dave, how about the storms on Sunday before we move on to the delightfulness?
Pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, crazy.
You know, it's part of this change from an El Nino pattern to a La Nina. It's just what happens. And Dallas got raked today. We have our families here for the holiday weekend, and they're stuck. So we get an added day.
Nice. Yeah. Wonderful. I love it. This is pretty ideal what's going on right now.
Yeah. There is a little batch of showers and thunder showers up to our north, basically north of Hannibal, north of Springfield, Illinois. It's moving to the southeast. We may get nicked by a little shower around sunset, but these things will dry up quickly with the setting sun. So I just want to put it out there that there could be a quick shower, but overall, clear skies, cool, temperatures slowly dropping through the 70s, 55 for the overnight low, gorgeous day again on Wednesday, sunny and 77, Thursday, sunny and 78, Friday, partly sunny near 80, just a tiny chance of a spot shower Friday afternoon as the southerly flow comes back. Over the weekend, first weekend of June, it's unsettled with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Of the 2 days, I'm more focused on Saturday than Sunday, but there will be stuff around. But I think the primary day is going to be Saturday.
It's amazing that you guys can do what you do. Like, you had been talking about Sunday since probably Wednesday
amazing.
Or Thursday. It is. And then, like, it was like you made an appointment with a storm. Like, Sunday at, like, 6 p.m., it's like, oh, here it is. Here's what they've been talking about for a few days.
I have my wizard hat.
I guess sometimes
it works.
I guess. Headlines, Rage?
Brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. All right. The company behind ChatGPT has formed a safety committee as it begins work on its newest, biggest AI model. OpenAI says the committee will advise on critical safety and security decisions for AI projects. The committee includes OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, along with executives from Quora, Sony, and other companies.
So that's something on AI today. Actually, it was on Total Information AM that the Olympians, I believe it is, the AI has some sort of a program or algorithm that it can catch hateful tweets and just delete them before they ever hit. Like in the nanosecond that someone goes, I can't believe that our 100-meter runner's this because he's a big blah, blah, blah. Before it ever hits, they can catch it and get rid of it. That's quite a development.
I like that. Yeah.
It's interesting. There have been times where things have been like flagged on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and it's the algorithm picking up something that's not necessarily there. So I get why people have concerns about that type of stuff. Like, oh, you're going to have a computer tell me that what I said was inappropriate without human eyes ever landing on it. I always kind of get the devil's advocate on arguments like that, because there have been times where people have been like locked out of their account and suspended because the algorithm thinks you're saying one thing because you're bringing up some keyword or something. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, especially the way like slang changes.
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the things that mean something cool that aren't actually cool, or, you know, vice versa. Like the way people use language changes. Is that going to pick up on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. There's also, I mean, it's also difficult for the AI, I would assume, if someone is like implying that they want to hurt you or implying something terrible.
That they'd covered that's really the magic of it, is that it can, this is scary, but that the AI can pick up your intentions even if they're well concealed.
Huh. I can get that if it can hear my voice. But if it's only seeing text, like say somebody... think about the goofy lines that Ranji throws out there when he'll say, yeah, I hate you, Amy.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't really. It's a joke. But is the AI going to pick up on that if it's just written in print? So let's say I'm replying to someone on Twitter and they made a joke that I didn't like and I just write back, I hate you. Is it going to know that I'm kidding? Mm-hmm. How is it going to know based on just the text on the page?
Wheels, have you ever gotten the notification that's like, are you sure you want to tweet this?
Yes.
You think?
Are you sure you want to say that word? Because some people don't like that word. I'm like, yes, stop asking me. I knew what I was doing.
After three straight months of declines, U.S. consumer confidence went upwards in the month of May. It jumped from 97.5 in April to 102 in May, according to the Conference Board. This tracks how Americans view the current economic conditions and how they expect them to shift in the coming months. Now, consumers do still fear a recession in the next year, but those concerns are significantly lower than this time last year.
You know what? I'm not a dumb guy, but... okay, a recession, a depression, whatever. I don't care what you call it. If it's costing me $10 for a 12-pack of soda, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care what you label it. I don't care if it hits this or it hits that. And I don't know what these people are so excited about, what they're looking up toward. Maybe it's just that it's been so bad for so long, they feel like it has to end at some point.
It's fascinating. I saw a story while I was out that was that we're in the vibes economy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like all of the indicators are like, yeah, the stock market's the record high and all that. And then, but like day to day, people are like, but yeah, I'm not feeling that. I'm not experiencing that. And maybe it's just shining a light, a really bright light on two dynamics. One would be the economy of the wealthy and the economy of the normies, and also age differences. I think this is a great economy if you're like watching your retirement fund grow, which I am. I'm like, all right, look at that. Keeps going up. Wonderful. But if I'm 30, I'm not even thinking about that. I mean, maybe I have something, but it's, you know, small and I'm not worried about it. But I got to pay $5 for a drink at a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Or I got to spend, you know, this ridiculous amount of money to get two steaks for Memorial Day to grill or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So passengers on a Spirit Airlines flight from Jamaica to Florida experienced a very scary moment in midair. Did anyone see this story?
Mm-mm.
After a suspected mechanical issue, passengers were told to put on life vests and prepare for a water landing. Ooh. Fortunately, the plane was able to turn around and land safely at the airport.
Spirit! It probably had a kid piloting.
Isn't it a scary experience just to board that thing?
No kidding!
Everyone prepare for water landing.
If you're landing in the water, you're like, well, at least we're landing.
Yeah.
Did you guys see this? Another billionaire plans a sub voyage to the Titanic after the OceanGate disaster.
Okay.
Larry Connor is an Ohio real estate tycoon, and he's commissioned a two-person submersible capable of reaching the Titanic and plans to make the trip with the sub's designer. He says he wants to prove that the trip can be made safely and insists that his submarine is of much higher quality than the OceanGate Titan, which he called a, quote, contraption.
See, this is the problem with billionaires. This is probably why he's a billionaire, because he's this guy. But then once you become a billionaire, you don't have the gear to just relax and own Maryland or something, you know? You have to Plus, they've already been there. It can be done safely, jackass. Someone's already done it. Go do something that's never been done. We've been to the bottom of
the Mariana Trench.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say. Like, don't scientists have ones that go way deeper than that?
Yeah, and even
just don't make it with video game controllers.
Even manned craft has been down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
T-Mobile has acquired U.S. Cellular in a $4.4 billion deal. T-Mobile is now the third largest mobile carrier in the U.S. behind AT&T and Verizon.
I don't know what I have. I think I have T-Mobile and they keep selling to other people.
Oh, because you probably had one of the ones that got bought up and all that?
I had Sprint.
Okay.
That's Sprint.
Okay.
So that's T-Mobile, then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now if they've sold to somebody else, got to buy another damn phone.
Yeah. I switched to them. They're good. I like T-Mobile.
No, they're buying something. So we'll still be T-Mobile.
Let me be an old man, Dave.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm getting my signals from.
And one final story here. The Reagan trailer has dropped. There's a new biopic about Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
Featuring Dennis Quaid portraying the Gipper. It will follow the 40th president's life from birth to death, focusing on his political rise and opposition to the Soviet Union. The cast also includes John Voight, Penelope Ann Miller, and others, other actors I've never really heard of. Scott Stapp from Creed is playing Frank Sinatra. I'm sorry.
Wait,
is this a fake story? Did somebody hand me a fake story?
It's real.
Scott! The Creed guy is playing Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
It's coming to theaters August 30th,
2024. What does Gipper mean? I've always heard that.
It was a
George
movie.
Gipp is his name.
The movie that he did.
It was Newt Rockne's speech. George Gipp was one of the players. Was he sick?
Something
like that. And then Newt Rockne said, win one for the Gipper, because that was his nickname.
I always heard Gipper, but
I would only see that if it were Randy Quaid.
And
playing.
Then old Ronald Reagan played... Did he play the Gipper, or did he play Newt Rockne?
I think he played Rockne.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you, Dave.
All righty.
Welcome back, DGS. We have a press conference coming up at 4 p.m. about the kids who died, possibly at the hands of their mother. We'll learn all about that in just a few minutes. Ian Mackey, a representative from the Clayton area, who's a friend of the show, is going to be on after that to discuss this sort of frustrating session going on. We have a new thing to worry about.
Uh-oh.
Gangs of feral chickens are quote-unquote unleashing hell.
Ooh, where are they at?
They're all over the place. Uh-huh. So, you know the craze a few years ago during COVID where people were keeping chickens?
Yes.
I guess it's sort of like when people get a snake and then they just release it into their woods because they're tired of taking care of the snake. Somehow the chickens got out and became feral and became mean, and they're clucking all night and they're eating everything, and
Can't you just, I don't know, like
kill
do
them?
What you normally do to chickens?
Eat them?
I mean, like, they're not that big.
What can we do?
You chop their head off, they keep running around. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah. Then we got even more problems.
It just seems like a funny thing to be
now
like feral chickens. Like, you think of a feral dog, like, that's a dangerous animal. Feral chicken's still a chicken.
chickens can be mean, though.
I mean, they're chickens.
How many chickens could you take?
Yeah.
All of them.
Get them all together.
All of them. Unless they get a stepladder, I got nothing to worry about.
TikTok things. Wheeler versus all chickens.
Just like those simulators. Like John Wick against 40 Darth
it's just
Vaders.
A stocky red-haired guy punching chicken after chicken.
Cracking his knuckle instead of in front of a gang of 75 chickens.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I have a live to do it.
He's imagining.
I'm doing chicken imitations.
I keep pointing at him like, you're up. All right.
What's making me laugh about this is there's actually a video game that was really popular where one of the nicknames when you're a noob, they start calling you the chicken chaser. So, I'm just saying.
I said they were clucking all night, so.